New Mexico has been among the top states in the nation when it comes to COVID-19 vaccine distribution. But there are still areas of Doñana County, for example, that are lagging behind. Today, we're joined by Las Cruces Vaccine Task Force members, City Councilor Tessa Abeta-Stuvi and Assistant City Manager Eric Enriquez, as well as Dr. Eugene Marciniak, Region Health Officer for the New Mexico Department of Health. We'll learn about ongoing efforts to reach herd immunity in our community and address concerns about areas in the region that are lagging behind the state's vaccination rate and what will happen with any leftover vaccines. Voice of the Public begins right after NPR News. Call with your questions, 575-646-2212. We'll get started next on KRWG Public Media. It's 106. Good afternoon. This is KC Counts. Happy to be back for Voice of the Public. And happy to be back with members of the Las Cruces Vaccine Task Force to talk about how we're doing in terms of reaching herd immunity in our community. And if you have questions regarding those ongoing efforts, please join the conversation. 575-646-2212 is the number to call to be a part of Voice of the Public on KRWG Public Media. You might also be following along on Facebook, so you can watch the show over the course of the next hour, and you can feel free to ask a question or leave a comment there as well. We thank you for joining us however you choose to join us, and are happy to welcome back Las Cruces City Councilor Tessa Abeta-Stuvi. Welcome back to Voice of the Public.
Thank you for having me, Casey.
And to Task Force Member Assistant City Manager Eric Enriquez, how are you doing?
Doing great. Thank you, Casey.
We are also pleased to welcome for the first time Dr. Eugene Marciniak, Region Health Officer for the New Mexico Department of Health. Welcome to KRWG.
Oh, thank you for having me on the show.
We're glad you're here. And we also have the Southwest Region Director for the Department of Health, Don Sanchez. And Don, you're also a member of the task force, correct?
Correct.
I'd like to start with you, actually, Don, to talk about the value of working with members of individual cities in order to take on these efforts.
Sure. Thank you, Casey. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I do have to say this has been a, as we all know, a group effort, a community effort in moving us through this pandemic, something I think a lot of us obviously have never seen in our lifetime at this level, but it has taken really all hands on deck. So we've had a tremendous partnership with the City of Las Cruces, the county, multiple agencies in the community to bring people on board from the testing that we began back in March of last year to now where we are as getting closer and closer to those benchmarks of having our populations vaccinated. So that has been one of the critical factors in all of this. And I think, as we know, we are all vested in this to get back to life as whatever normal might be. But it's definitely something that has brought multiple new partnerships into the mix, plus old ones that we just continue to rely on within our whole healthcare system and our community support. So it has been tremendous.
Dr. Marciniak, tell us a little bit about your background and your role in all of this with the health department.
Oh, okay. I'm the health officer and physician with the Department of Health here in Las Cruces. I've actually been here since 2003, and I've been with the Department of Health for the past 20 years total. And, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic is not our first outbreak. I mean, we are always investigating. You know, our epidemiology offices are always tracking and monitoring diseases across the state. Just since I've been here, I mean, we had the West Nile virus cases that started in 2003 and now continue to this day in very low numbers. We had sort of a preparation for the COVID pandemic in 2009 with the H1N1 influenza pandemic, which thankfully turned out to be an extremely mild influenza, you know, pandemic, where it was a new strain that actually came out. We had the Zika virus that was in the Central and South America and the Caribbean that we were monitoring closely. And our staff in around the state and in Las Cruces has been working almost nonstop on the COVID pandemic since, I'd say, it's about March of last year.
Let's move next to Assistant City Manager Eric Enriquez. Mr. Enriquez, tell us a little bit about some of the challenges the task force has faced since its inception in terms of getting to where we are today.
Well, with the pandemic, it was there was a lot of challenges, but it was a community that came together. As Dawn has mentioned, we've all been working together. The great leadership, I would say, from the city of Las Cruces, our mayor and council. Our mayor had come up with the idea of we need to start a vaccine task force and get the community together so that we can face those challenges that we're seeing. And then Councillor Stubbe stepping up to be the chair of that task force. But right from the get-go, it was the limited amount of vaccine that we were seeing in our community was probably the greatest challenge that we were faced with. And, you know, taking a stance and sending letters to the state and saying that we needed the vaccine down here in Doñana County. And that was primarily the biggest challenge we faced from the beginning. And then just coordinating a lot of the vaccine, the sites and everything, working with the Office of Emergency, working with the Department of Health, the Las Cruces Fire Department, becoming a provider. Those all just started to come together as the vaccine came. Then all I've said it before, we've seen the fruits of our labor, come together, and that's where we're at today. But those were some of the challenges.
We're going to talk, and Tessa, I'll come to you next in just a moment to talk about some of the numbers and where we stand today in terms of our area. But 575-646-2212 is the telephone number to call, and we have James on the line. Welcome to Voice of the Public. James, thank you for calling.
Hi. I've been trying to get some information that I haven't found in any of the COVID dashboards or anything. When announcing the vaccination rates, which the news today said was around 55% for total vaccinations for New Mexico, there's another factor that I haven't seen covered. It's recovered natural infections. And before I get into this, let me tell you, I'm very strongly in favor of vaccines. I was one of the first in line. I'm up in Grant County in Silver City, and something like 5% of Grant County seems to have been recovered COVID infections. And when you move to the state, the number is about 9% of the population are recovered COVID infections. And I guess one of my first questions is, how much overlap is there between vaccinations and recoveries? And have people been keeping an eye on that recovered number as being a factor in herd immunity? Because if it is, then perhaps New Mexico could hope to be somewhere around 65% immune, which is getting into the range that was proposed for herd immunity. Although I suspect we're going to need to be a little higher before it's going to be really effective. That's about it.
Well, James, thank you. Dr. Marciniak, would that be something you could address?
Oh, it's actually a really good question, but it's a difficult question because the current recommendations are whether you've been infected previously with COVID-19 or you have not, you are still recommended to have the vaccine series, either the one shot Johnson & Johnson or the two shot Moderna Pfizer's. And they actually think it's good for people who've had the previous mild infections or moderate or any kind of infection to get it because it's sort of like a booster to the previous immunity you had from the shot. There's an overlap between, the number of people who have been infected previously is an estimate. And, I've seen ranges up to even up to, like I said, 15% of the people in New Mexico may have been infected, but it's an estimate. And so we have good data for how many people have been vaccinated, and we have the estimates for how many people have had previous infections. but I don't think we have real good, I mean, I don't have real good numbers on the top of my head about how many of those, because we can't track how many of the people previously infected have been vaccinated, because there's many people out there who had mild cases and never got diagnosed too. And there's no easy test. The antibody tests aren't really good for proving that you've previously been infected.
How long do those natural antibodies last?
Oh, the natural antibodies can last for a period of months, and then they decline. But you know, the theory is there's more than one type of immunity. Even if the antibodies go down, the immune system has memory. So, you know, it's good evidence so far that it's at least 6 months if you've had an infection. But they actually, you know, they're starting to get data that it may actually be longer, up to a year or more for previous infections.
All right. Well, thank you so much for the question, James. We appreciate it. And if you have a question, 575-646-2212 is the number to call for Voice of the Public on KRWG. Now, Tessa, back to you for some of those numbers in terms of where we stand now in Las Cruces and Doñana County on how we're progressing compared to the rest of the state.
Yes, thank you, Casey. First, I do want to just say thank you very much to Don Sanchez and Stephen Lopez, who is part of our Office of Emergency Management. Really, the information that they've been able to bring to us at each task force meeting is vital to how we are able to move forward. And I've said collaboration and innovation have been the keys during this time. We are recognizing that there was, you know, a significant equity issue at the very beginning of this pandemic for Doñana County. Right now, I do have the percentage of fully dosed individuals in Doñana is 53.1%, and at least with one dose is 62.5%. And so we are seeing, you know, a lot better numbers on that. Obviously, with the task force, we do have a goal of 80% by winter. And so we know that's, you know, a very optimistic percentage, but we are trying to get as many people as possible. And then recognizing that we are getting information from the Department of Health, and I want to thank Don again. We have the high social vulnerability index and low vaccine rate slides that were shown every week. The data I am sharing now is from May 18th, so we are about a week and a half out already. But at the last meeting, our areas that had the lowest amounts of vaccination were at Sunland Park with 37.6, Chaparral with 39.9, and Anthony with 46.6. And so I know a lot of work is being done to see how we reach our rural communities and really working on mobilization of clinics to those spaces and addressing any sort of barriers in place that might happen, whether it's technology, language access, or just the need for more information so that they can feel confident about their choices for taking the vaccine.
Don, is this the same kind of thing that you would see around the region in terms of those population centers generally outpacing the more rural parts of the state?
Casey, yes, I think absolutely. In our more urban areas, obviously there's probably more access to the vaccine. And I think that's why we really have partnered with not only our federally qualified health centers, for example, La Clínica de Familia in those areas that Counselor Stube mentioned, Chaparral, Sunland Park, Anthony are doing weekly clinics in those areas. We as well have been working with the National Guard. We have the National Guard working very close with us to do mobile events. So they'll kind of go wherever we send them to go. So it's been phenomenal sending them to different areas in the county. They've been to Hatch, they've been to Rincon. We have staff that have even gone, you know, over to obviously into Chaparral, Anthony, Sunland Park. So we're as well really trying to get to those areas where there might be more limited access and kind of go to the public. There's also the opportunity now for anyone, you know, if it's a business though, an agency that needs on-site vaccinations, they can go ahead and request on-site vaccinations at their location through the app, the registration app on the Department of Health website. So that's an opportunity now to go where we might need to go that people can't come to us. So we have seen a slowdown. We have some of our larger events. We've been working with the city with the convention center and doing 1,500 people Wednesday, Thursdays. Also working at the Doñana County Community College branch on East Mesa. So some of those larger events have started to slow down. So we're really trying to be more targeted as to where we're going. We want to really focus on some of those essential worker populations too. Again, that might not be able to come to us. We've started some evening clinics, some Saturday clinics as well, and that has turned out to be very helpful for a lot of our population too. So we're at that point, as Eric had just mentioned too. We had a limited amount of vaccine at the beginning, and now we have a lot of vaccine. We just need to get it into those arms that quite haven't had the opportunity to, or just need assistance in that way.
Yeah, and Eric, I'd like to ask you, in terms of, you know, we know what some of the barriers are, but we know one of the barriers is vaccine hesitancy. How does the task force plan to deal with that?
Oh, thank you, Casey. And early on, we saw that with the limited registration. You know, the DOH had their portal, and we created a task force within from the city with city employees and volunteers that went out to different businesses, different sites, different locations throughout the community to get people registered. And that really helped to get people registered and also give them some information and education on the vaccine. We've done a number of things like that. There was over like 1,200 contacts that the volunteers of the registration campaign saw. They were able to register 300 people. They were able to evaluate where the people were on their on the portal, and if any changes had to be made or anything as the portal continued to change and add different features. And so they were updated, and those really helped to educate. We will continue with the task force now, probably reaching out to our different organizations, whether they're faith-based organizations, businesses, to collaborate with them if there's anyone that's hesitant to receive the vaccine now. So that probably be next steps with the vaccine task force.
And Dr. Marciniak, from your point of view, what is the information that you want people to have? So, for example, I don't know if we all know a few folks who are hesitant. I certainly do. People I love who are, I would consider, in higher risk groups, who are not going to get this vaccine because of just some maybe misinformation or things they have heard that they believe that, you know, as far as we can tell, are not true. So what is the message that you would want to pass along, Dr. Marciniak, to those folks?
Well, the first thing we'd like to let people know is that, you know, all the three vaccines that are currently out there have been extensively studied and currently being intensively monitored for side effects, whether rare or common. And these vaccines are all safe. The rare side effects that have been reported in the press are extremely rare. They're one out of tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands. And so it's, you know, any adverse event is getting reported. So when we have people that are hesitant, you know, we try to convince them that, you know, these are safe vaccines, and you have to look at the risk of the COVID infection itself versus the extremely rare risk of having unusual side effects to these vaccines. You know, we've already vaccinated millions of people around the country with all three vaccines, and so the things, you know, we're getting a really good idea of the safety panel and how safe these vaccines are. You know, the vaccines are not required for school entry at this point, and you know that there's not very many places that are requiring it for employment. So we always encourage people to get vaccinated, but we, you know, at this point we can't bully people into getting vaccinated.
575-646-2212, the telephone number to call if you have a question for our panel today. Hearing an update on efforts to continue to try to reach herd immunity in our community. It is 1:24, and we would love to have you along. So check in anytime. I do want to get back to the topic of vaccine requirements just a little bit later on. But Councillor Stuvey, I wanted to come back to you. for how things have changed. You know, people may be a little bit more hesitant, say women 18 to 49 who are in that group that would be maybe more susceptible to the issues that we saw, although very, very rare with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. But it seems like we're at a point now where there are offerings in so many more places, and you pretty much could have your choice of which vaccine you want to get. Is that accurate?
Well, I do think that there are a lot of different providers that each have their own access to different vaccines, whether it be the Johnson & Johnson or the Pfizer or Moderna. But looking at the data, even, you know, I know it was out of an abundance of caution that they paused the Johnson & Johnson. But really, I mean, there are many different medications that women take often that have higher risks for those blood clots and stuff. So it was really out of that abundance of caution. But I do want to stress that I think it's important to get the vaccine. And while some places may have more of an opportunity to pick and choose, that's not necessarily the case, especially in rural communities. And so I think it's just more important that you get that vaccine and that you get yourself protected.
And vaccines are now being much more widely offered. Let's talk a little bit about where those vaccines are being given now versus just a few short weeks ago.
Yes, thank you. I really want to commend our hospitals. We have Memorial Medical Center, Mountain View, that really stepped up and provided vaccinations to a lot of people in the beginnings, especially our first responders and caregivers. And from there, then we saw those mass pod events, convention center, NMSU with the Department of Health. And now we're seeing more of an increase, and I'm sure Don will be able to elaborate, but within our Ben Archer Health Centers, La Clinica de Familia, we have primary care providers now too that are able to have the ability to distribute this vaccine. So it's really expanding that access so people can get it from also people that they trust and the doctors that they trust. And I think that's an important part of that conversation when addressing hesitancy.
Don, would you like to, in fact, expand on that?
Sure. Thank you. And thank you, Councillor Stupe. She gave a good description. Like she mentioned, our fairly qualified health centers, even including the Amador Health Center we have here as well in Las Cruces, is a vaccine provider and provides vaccine. You're also able to get it through Walgreens. So Walgreens as well is another provider of the vaccine, along with Walmart, Sam's in this community, besides those that Councillor Stube had mentioned too. So there's a wide variety of ways to get your vaccine. We are also really working with other smaller offices, pediatrician offices, other primary care providers to become COVID providers, just so that they can offer this as part of their normal menu. You know, there is thought that there might be boosters that need to take place come the new year, what have you. So we're also trying to just encourage it to be really wherever your provider is that they carry the vaccine. So we're just working. That's kind of the next phase with the vaccine.
And Eric, at this point, let's talk a little bit about those younger groups of people that are now eligible to receive their vaccine and what efforts the task force is doing to specifically reach that younger population and their parents.
I'm sorry, what was that for me? You were asking me, Casey?
That's right. To address the younger population, now that we have 12 to 15-year-olds, teenagers are eligible to receive the vaccine, what kind of efforts is the task force undertaking to get that younger side of the population vaccinated and to reach their parents too, I guess, right?
Yeah, right now I would say that Don with the Department of Health and Stephen Lopez have really taken the lead on that, working with the Las Cruces Public Schools. We do have some of the board members on our task force giving comments and feedback and helping us give direction based on their needs and what they've seen. But really, the Department of Health has really done a great job with getting the Las Cruces High School as a site location and working at others in Hatch and different areas throughout the county to get students vaccinated. That is one that we will be working on as well, as far as getting some information and education out as well as time goes on.
Councillor Stuvey, how do you feel at this point about the city's efforts overall over the course of the pandemic to kind of just help keep vulnerable people afloat?
Thank you. I'm really proud of the city response that we've been able to get during this pandemic, whether it's part of our aid packages that we've been able to distribute, which is over $3.3 million. We gave about $500,000 in hazard pay for our first responders and essential workers. And then looking on these other steps of how can we best assist, whether it be with funding. Personnel is a great issue. And that's, you know, during a pandemic, there is so much to do and there are only so many hours of the day and so many people. And so seeing how we can best fit in with all of that. I do want to go back actually to one of your questions that you had right before when it talks about our younger populations getting the vaccine, and really thank Don and our school board members that sit on the committee for bringing up the fact of that we needed a little education for parents and the students as well. And so they had a question and answer forum. And then they're going to also doing direct clinics at our community schools. And so I believe we have one coming up at Booker T. Washington and one more soon too. And so making that specific direct outreach so that parents feel comfortable, kids are excited. I know I had a pair of 12-year-olds myself that were really excited to be able to get their vaccine and a 6-year-old that can't wait for their turn. But I think Dawn has some more that she can comment on that issue as well.
Right. Go ahead, Don.
Thank you. So I just wanted to mention, so right now, too, the Pfizer vaccine is the only vaccine approved for the 12 to 17. So it's been a great partnership, as mentioned by Eric and Councillor Stuvey, too, working with Las Cruces Public Schools. The nurses have been tremendous. They've been helping actually give vaccines not only prior at the Doña Ana County East Mesa branch, or actually with Mountain View. They helped Mountain View give some vaccines. And then they've actually been doing, you know, finishing up their school pods at Las Cruces High School. So they had their last one yesterday morning, the half day of school, and they're willing to continue to help out. So it's been a great partnership. And working with Stephen Lopez, as Eric had mentioned, with the Office of Emergency Management, we're finishing up the second dose of vaccines at the Hatch High School today, actually. So we're working in that area. And then the Gadsden Independent School District has been also a great provider of having vaccination events every Wednesday for several months. And then again, when Pfizer was approved for the 12 to 15, really focusing on getting the kids and the families in. So we've been working with having vaccine events in all the high schools in the Gadsden School District. There is a need for parent consent. So that's one thing too, that you can fill that out. It is on the app as well. We really want to encourage anyone who has children in that age range to please, you know, register them, come and get the vaccine. You can fill out the consent, bring it with you. We have consent at any of the sites that we have as well. So we really want to push to, again, get that population, you know, fully vaccinated as we move forward.
I'm reminded of listening to a 13-year-old girl who was interviewed on NPR, who was part of those clinical trials. And it brings a tear to my eye because she was so passionate about wanting to do her part to help other kids her age. And so just a shout out to all of those young people and their parents who were brave enough to partake in those clinical trials for everyone. 575-646-2212, the telephone number. And Elaine is on the line with a question. Welcome to Voice of the Public. Elaine, thank you for calling.
Thank you. Listen, I have a question. No one has addressed the VAERS adverse event reporting system. It is a very effective system in case anybody does have symptoms of any sort or adverse reactions. So I just was wondering why nobody's mentioned that.
Well, I can't necessarily say why we haven't mentioned, just hasn't come up yet. Perhaps Dr. Marciniak, you can talk about that system, what its purpose is, and what people should do if they have specific things to report, and the value of it as well.
Yes, right. It is linked to the CDC, so it is a valid and effective reporting system. I have one more other question. Now, why are people who have been vaccinated, why are they reporting getting COVID? I was just wondering. I'll hang up and let you speak to that.
All right. Thank you. Bye, Elaine. Have a great day. All right, Dr. Marciniak, we'll let you begin.
Okay. No, those are two good questions. What she was referring to is the VAERS reporting system. It's called the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. And it's the way, after either a drug, a medication, or a vaccine is released, it's the reporting from, clinicians and doctors and nurses around the country, any kind of, we actually report vaccine errors if somebody got the wrong vaccine or too early or too late, but it's also any adverse effect. And it's really the initial system. I mean, there's other ways that are tracked. So there's like thousands, I can tell you personally, I've been involved with at least 20 vaccine reports. And most of them have been really mild side effects, red arms and rashes. And we had a person faint and have to go to the hospital, one person. And so whenever there's any event that's significant enough, we report it. But you have to remember that, when we first started giving vaccines, we were giving it to nursing home residents. And so when you look at the raw data, it's like we gave 1 million vaccines, or let's say 100,000 vaccines to nursing home residents, and 1,000 of them died. But these are sick people, and if they died within a month after a vaccine, it doesn't mean the vaccine caused the death. So it's really the first step for reporting, but the CDC has other reporting systems and other ways to, when you get the raw data for the VAERS, then it has to be analyzed. But it is the first tool that identifies if you get 100 reports of red arms. When we first gave the vaccine, everybody was getting a red arm and we kept on reporting it. And then it's just, we know that's a known common side effect or swollen glands under the arms. So it's the initial system, but it has to be analyzed. And, it does an association. The association of side effects with the vaccine doesn't mean that the vaccine caused that effect. That's what has to be studied. As far as the second question about why are some people who are getting the vaccine getting infected with COVID? And it is true. That is a true statement, but it's very rare. It's a very tiny percentage. I can't tell you the exact percentage, but it's a very small percentage of previously vaccinated people who have been reinfected. And in general, they get infected after getting the vaccine. In general, their cases are milder than, mild cases. They don't tend to get the severe cases. The vaccine is very effective. In children, it works almost 100% in preventing infection and serious infection. In adults, the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, in particular, are about 95% effective in preventing severe illness. And so they're very effective vaccines. But there's always going to be a chance, particularly as I've had my vaccine 6 months ago. So if I get exposed, I may get reinfected, or I may have a mild case that I don't even know I had it. But the other good part is people who have been vaccinated, they're not likely to spread it if they do get a mild asymptomatic case or really mildly symptomatic case.
All right. 1:38 now, and Juanito is our next caller on the line with a question for Voice of the Public. Good afternoon, Juanito. Thank you for calling. How are you?
I am doing great, and I'll be doing better if I can go to New Mexico. That's a good summary. My question is, here in El Paso, I've pretty much followed the CDC local guidelines, haven't left El Paso County pretty much since I walked across Puente Libre on the 16th of March last year, a few hours before the border closed. And I very much went on a bike tour into southern New Mexico, and I have avoided it because I'm afraid of there's going to be more spread. Is it okay for me to be able to bike tour over there now, going to cruises in Columbus, Hachita, Rodeo? Debbie, you know?
Sure. Well, Tessa, why don't you address that in terms of travel from El Paso into southern New Mexico?
Thank you, Juanito, for that question. Obviously, if you are going to go out, and I'm not quite sure if you said you were vaccinated or yet or not, but if you aren't...
I am fully vaccinated.
That's wonderful. And so they are still saying that it is okay to travel. We have lifted different recommendations from the governor's office as well as far as the types of gatherings that we can do. I would say we are still under some restrictions. We have that, it was red to green, but it's now red to turquoise framework. And so there are some restrictions, and businesses can still require certain types of masking as well. And so feel free, I would say safely travel, make sure that you are, being open and honest with those that you travel with about vaccines. Sure. And be safe out there.
I'm a solo cyclist, so if I'm honest with me, myself, and I, then I'll be okay.
Thank you, Juanito.
Thank you so much.
Looking forward to seeing you soon. Take care now.
No. Bye.
Bye-bye. And our next caller on the line is Ken. Ken, welcome to Voice of the Public. Thank you for calling.
Since we require lots of vaccines before kids can go to school, when are we going to start requiring a vaccine against COVID for those that are old enough?
So I mentioned earlier that I wanted to get back to the idea of vaccine requirements because it's something that's getting a lot of talk, and it seems like there isn't really anyone yet willing to commit to that idea. Maybe, Don, you could start on the idea. And what are the discussions like in terms of vaccine requirements that you've been privy to?
You know, it definitely has come up. I know, especially for the school children, you know, right now there are childhood vaccinations that are required for school. So I know that the conversation right now, as Dr. Marciniak had mentioned, and he probably would be a good one to also ask the question of, it's not required at this point in time to come back to school in the fall. But he may have been on other questions or other communication in regards to this topic. So I might, if you don't mind, toss it to Dr. Marciniak to see if he can answer further.
Yeah. Yes. And I could follow up with that. We have the required vaccines, but, you know, we also have some optional vaccines, such as the HPV or Gardasil vaccine is also optional. There's a couple of reasons why. I mean, it's still, you know, all these vaccines are still under emergency use authorization. It's not likely. We have national groups. It's called the ACIP. That's an immunization group that meets every year and makes recommendations for required vaccinations. I think the states have some leeway with the recommendations too. We want the schools to be open. We want all the kids to be vaccinated, as many as we can. The 12 to 19, even if we only do the 12 to 19 year olds before the fall semester starts, they're still one of the biggest spreaders. We believe younger children are less likely to spread the COVID to their families than adults, the under 12, and particularly the younger kids, first graders and kindergarten through probably fifth grade. So at this point, it's going to be really highly encouraged. But unless things change, the current advice I've heard is it's not going to be a requirement. But we're going to be, strongly encouraging all the parents to get their kids vaccinated age 12 and above. We're hoping that the Moderna vaccine is also approved soon for the 12 to 17 age group. And then sometime in the fall, we're pretty confident that the younger children, it could be as low as 6 months or even 2 years in age and above, may be able to get vaccinated too later on in the fall. So, the more kids we get, we're able to vaccinate all the adults who want to be vaccinated now who are working in the schools and other places, But the more children we have vaccinated, it's going to be safer for all of us, you know, because the kids, although they rarely get severely ill with COVID, they can't spread it to their adults and grandparents who still might get severely ill if they haven't been vaccinated. So at this point, it doesn't look like a requirement.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Marciniak, and thank you, Ken, for the call. It is 1:45, and Mr. Enriquez, I'd like to get back to you to talk about any discussions among the task force or the city in terms of vaccine requirements for, say, city workers.
Thank you, Casey. As you stated, we're looking into it. No one has really mandated that. I mean, some of the things that the city is doing is for our own travel of our personnel. If we have city employees that are traveling, it is being required that they are fully vaccinated before we approve the travel. Those type of things that we do have in our control, since as we're paying for the travel, and those are some of the things as far as the travel has to be a necessity, such as a continuing education class or training that they need to attend. We're evaluating that. I know in public safety, such as the fire department, certain vaccinations are required, you know, such as hepatitis C, tuberculosis shots, things of that. And we're looking and seeing what that is across the nation and eventually if that's going to be a requirement. But at this point, it's not mandated and it's not required to be vaccinated.
The city did just recently with a mayoral proclamation, if that's the right terminology to use, but Friday before last, I believe. And so City Council decided to extend that in terms of relaxing mask requirements. Mr. Enriquez, what is the current rule in terms of going around into city buildings without a mask?
Correct. If you're fully vaccinated, you do not you're not required to wear a mask. It's going on the honor system, but there are certain locations and facilities in the city, such as transit, that's federally mandated that they do wear the mask, and other city-sponsored functions where we're looking at youth activities where they're not vaccinated and they have to wear their mask.
575-646-2212, the telephone number to call. If you have a question for any of the members of our panel today, Vaccine Task Force members, City Councilor Tessa Aveta-Stuvi and Assistant City Manager Eric Enriquez, we have Dr. Eugene Marciniak, the Region Health Officer for the New Mexico Department of Health, and the Southwest Region Director for the Department of Health, Don Sanchez. And we appreciate all of your time. We know how exhausting this has been since the beginning for each and every one of you. But I'd like to get from each of you your perspective, and we'll start with you, Don, about what last Memorial Day, they were Friday before Memorial Day, and I was actually working from home at that time and would be for just a few more days. But I just remember these dire warnings about going out and getting together with family and, you know, what could happen in the event that people did that. And we obviously saw a pretty worst case scenario of what would happen after those events. And compare that to where we are today.
Thank you, Casey. Well, I think we can all breathe probably literally a little easier, you know, this year from last year. I mean, at that point in time, obviously, we were just trying to contain the virus as best that we could. Again, the stay-at-home orders in place, a lot of testing going on, as you mentioned too, Casey. Really, the spike in cases came pretty much October, a little bit later, even in last year. So all that we had been doing, you know, was trying to mitigate, but it was still very much part of our lives. So a lot of us were, as well, I was teleworking to a degree at that point in time too. So we have come a long way. It has been, like I said, all hands on deck to get to this place that we're at. I mean, really looking at us as we're a community, we're, you know, we have loved ones all around us trying to keep us all safe. And that's, I think, what we did. the best that we could. And now that the vaccine here, it's really, I think the light is at the end of the tunnel to a degree. It doesn't mean we're out of the woods. Again, there's still, as being a new virus, there's still some things that are unknown. Also, just the immunity and the longevity of the vaccine. So this will be with us for a while to come still. I think our COVID safe practices as well, they're in place for a reason. And like Councillor Stube had mentioned, we do have this red, yellow, green, turquoise metric that's been used in the state over time to see where we are as we start to try and reopen. So one thing I just wanted to mention on that too is the Governor Lujan Grisham is really wanting us to get 60% fully vaccinated statewide by the end of June is kind of her goal in order for us to really reopen our economy and to hopefully sunset that, the color coding for our counties. So what that really means too right now is if we can get all the folks who have gotten their initial booster to complete their series and getting their booster, we will meet that goal statewide. So I just want to encourage anyone who has already had their initial vaccine and they're waiting for their booster, or if they haven't scheduled it, hopefully it's already scheduled, that they take care of that, you know, during the month of June. Let alone anyone else who is interested in having the vaccine, you know, now's the time. There's plenty of vaccine available. We really encourage folks just to go ahead and register. If there's anyone who has any questions or concerns or needs help with registering as well, we have a number here in Las Cruces at our health office. It's 575-528-5119. Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, where we can help you get registered and get you into an event. So I just wanted to encourage folks at this point in time, still, we still have a little ways to go, but really appreciate, you know, all the support and coordination that has taken place over this time. So we're in a much better place than we were last year at this time, but I think we're not necessarily out of the woods yet. We still need to be some cautious as we move forward, and that's why those COVID safe practices are in place.
And Dr. Marciniak, I do have a question about the vaccine, and it's a question that I get asked from time to time, is there any difference at all between the first shot and the second shot?
Oh, I think you must be asking about the other difference in side effects between the first two shots. Probably.
No, not necessarily. No. I think the question is there anything different between the first shot and the second shot that you would get with Pfizer or Moderna?
Oh, no, I mean, both shots are the same. I mean, it's the same dose, same everything. People can get the side effects. You know, sometimes they get it more, you know, the mild fever and chills after the second shot a little more often than the first shot. But the doses are the same for children. That actually for 12 and above, the dose is the same as an adult. And, you know, a lot of kids that age nowadays are almost the size of adults anyways. So, you know, there's not any, you know, the doses are the same right now for all the, you know, the Modernas and the Pfizers. The dose is the same as it was before for children and adults. The two shots are the same. Some people experience more side effects after either sometimes after the second shot, but people get side effects after, mild side effects after the first shot too.
I feel like one of the lucky ones for sure when it comes to that. I really sailed through. But do we know why that is? Why people react so differently?
No, they really don't. I mean, they know just from numbers that they think, you know, women tend to get a few more systemic side effects than men, and they don't know why that is. Younger people's immune systems are more vigorous than older people, so older people tend to get fewer, we've seen this, that they get fewer side effects in some cases than younger people do. It's just that you have a young immune system, so your body just reacts more to the shots you're getting.
All right, thank you for that. And Councillor Stube, how about your perspective from 1 year ago to today?
That's a really great question. Last year, I think we were all kind of gearing up and building up, and then recognizing the roles of the city, what we have to do to make sure that our community stays safe as possible. And then recognizing that we all go home to our families and have a different type of environment. Myself, I went home to a child that's high risk and a spouse who is a nurse and was working directly during this pandemic. And so we all had this kind of build up. And I believe from there, it was really looking and addressing all the needs as they were happening. And now I think we're able to do a little bit more anticipation and proactive type of needs assessments or care. And that's for us making sure that we are going out and addressing mobility issues for people that might not have the ability to go get a vaccine. We're able to look at messaging and even see what are we going to do this fall when people are going to start to need those boosters and any type of other information that they need. So we don't turn into having a similar situation as we did this last fall. And so we're able to look at that a little bit different and probably prepare even better instead of being a little bit more just reactive.
We just have a few minutes left. Mr. Enriquez, I'd like to ask you, I mean, obviously the city was in a transition period anyway, in between city managers for a pretty long time. And so I'd like to ask, you know, how the new city manager is settling in. Obviously, Mr. Peely wanted to get out and go see every part of Las Cruces as part of his very first duties. How was he able to do that and how are things going?
Oh, Mr. Peely is a great asset, not only to our organization, but to this community. He's done a lot of reaching out to the community. It's been difficult to reach out to employees, but as we're doing right now on Zoom meetings and things of that nature, that's what he's been doing and reaching out to a lot of members of the community and getting involved and being engaged. And he's doing a tremendous job in adjusting well. Very well liked, very well respected, with a lot of knowledge and experience. But, you know, he is a very caring and compassionate man, and he'll fit with what Las Cruces is all about.
We have a caller on the line. Let's see if we can squeeze in John's question. Hi, John. How are you?
Hi, Casey. Good. How are you?
Great. Thank you.
I have a question for Dr. Marciniak.
Go ahead.
I know there's been a lot of discussion or thought giving vaccines to younger and younger groups of people. But I was just wondering whether or not there's an upper age limit where the vaccine is not even recommended to be given.
Thanks for the question, John. Dr. Marciniak?
No, there's actually no upper age limit. I mean, if you have a 90-year-old, 100-year-old person, we would still recommend that they get the COVID vaccine, because we know the older you are, the more likely you are to get a serious COVID infection if you haven't been vaccinated. So that there really isn't any upper limit. The only reason not to get the shot is if someone has been allergic to, you know, a previous COVID shot, had a severe life-threatening reaction to it, where they've had life-threatening reactions, anaphylactic reactions to one of the ingredients that is, you know, in the actual COVID vaccines. So if someone's had a severe reaction to previous shots, the allergy specialist or their family doctor might need to look at the ingredients to see if there's any of the common ingredients in both shots. But no age limit on the shots as far as the upper age limit.
Well, thank you very much for your answer.
Thank you, John. You remind me of my 96-year-old great aunt, Isla Fay, who I just spoke to a couple of weeks ago and was upset to hear she hadn't gotten her vaccine yet. You know, it's been a really tough road for folks having to stay so isolated, and especially those elder members of our community. And, you know, as we slowly get out, maybe get out a little bit this weekend, Don, what advice is the State Department of Health offering for people who are traveling this Memorial Day weekend?
Thank you, Casey. I think for the weekend too, I mean, I would just recommend folks to always check on the Department of Health website for the COVID safe practices and what's being requested right now. I know there are still some limitations on gatherings. Again, if you're fully vaccinated, it's a little different. You're able to be, I think it's in larger groups now than it was before. So I would just recommend that folks, if there's questions on that, to really check out the COVID safe practices that we have listed on the website.
575-646-2212. Thank you very much for all of your participation today. Don Sanchez, Southwest Region Director for the Department of Health. thank you for jumping in and joining us this afternoon for Voice of the Public. And I want to say thanks very much to Dr. Eugene Marciniak, the Region Health Officer for the Department of Health, and Assistant City Manager Eric Enriquez, as well as City Councilor Tessa Aveta-Stuvi. The community appreciates all of your hard work. Thank you very much for being with us here today. And I can't wait to have you back to share some more positive news in the near future. Everybody's on mute now. So as we approach 2 o'clock, we appreciate you listening today as well, whether it's on your FM dial or by Facebook, and for following along on Facebook. And of course, you know, you can stream KRWG at krwg.org 24/7. And if you're just tuning in and missed the better portion of the show today, you can always find it at krwg.org. Just as soon as we wrap up here at 2:01, we'll get that posted for you. It'll be under local radio and Voice of the Public. Thanks very much to engineers Jake Lockwood and Mark Johnson for keeping us on the air today. And coming up next on KRWG, it's Intermezzo by Request. Leora Zeitlin will be here right after NPR News to take your requests until 4 o'clock this afternoon. And I'll be back during All Things Considered. So you'll definitely be tired of me by the time this day is done. Heck, I'm even tired of me.